This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. And we have reached the threshold for a meeting. We've gone beyond our threshold of five participants by five after, so I'm thankful for that. And I'd like to press on and see what we can accomplish in this call. Let's begin with the typical administrative matters. First of all, I'd like to ask if there's anybody who's on the call right now who's on the phone but not in the Adobe room, if they would make themselves known. Hearing none, let me next ask if there is anybody on the call that wants to note a change, update, or anything to their statement of interest. Hearing none again, seeing none, let's press on to agenda item number two, and that's the status of the sign-up sheet. My thanks to Greg and to Aubrey for signing up for some issues. I have a note to Bernie that I went in the sign-up sheet and added a line item for types of hearings. I didn't think that fell well under discovery, evidence, et cetera. And so there is another open item on the sheet, and I think I need to add my name in there for the discovery. I'm just taking a real quick look. Discovery, evidence, and statements. I've started on it, but I haven't added my name. And once again, I would encourage folks to take a look at this list. You must be getting bored hearing from me on some of these issues, and it's open for the remaining issues for people to grab them and go. I'll send another email to the list if I'm about to pick up another issue, just to try and avoid that and give people an opportunity. But we are moving through the comments. That's very nice, and so that's my food for thought. Any comments on agenda item number two? Does anybody want to say anything? Seeing no hands and hearing nothing, let's move to three. This is dealing with our own timeline, and we're going to miss our May 29th date. I've asked Bernie if he would be speak to us about that date, what we need to do to move it, and I'm just hopeful that whatever we move it to is something that we can meet. I think we're making good progress now on the rules between the list and the phone calls. But Bernie, could you just chat a little bit about this, what this date is and how we can move it and those kinds of things?
Well, it's going to be sort of short. Thank you, David. We're a little bit in uncharted territory here. Usually, I would say a high percentage of time the comments analysis is posted when it was advertised. We've already extended significantly, and we are not meeting that. Now, I do not believe that we will be fined for this or that the stormtroopers will come knocking on our doors, thank goodness. However, the community, it's a look of the community to our work, and I think it's exceptional. What I might propose, and I have to run this by the powers that be internally, since we will not be meeting our deadline, I'm wondering if people would find it acceptable if we would post a note in lieu of the comment analysis and resolution, which we should post, advising that we are working on this, that some of these are really fundamental issues to how ICANN will work, and everyone believes that it is best to do it right rather than do it fast. Back over to you, David.
Thanks, Bernie. My hand is up as a participant, so Caboose has the floor first. Caboose, over to you.
Hello?
Hello. We just started hearing you, Caboose.
Do you hear me, please?
Faintly, yes.
Okay. After good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, how many more meetings do you need? How many more sessions, in fact, you need?
Caboose, if I heard you right, did you say how many more sessions are there in June?
Yeah, no. How many more sessions you need to complete the work?
Oh, to complete the work.
The deadline for the latest deadline is what and how many more meetings you need in order to extend 29th of May to somewhere in the middle of June? This is a question, if possible.
Thank you, Caboose. My personal feeling is that we're now sort of hitting stride on these comments, and it won't take us all that long. My hope is that to finish our work on the rules. So I'll answer your question in two parts. To finish on the rules, I'm thinking we need several more meetings, depending on what kind of debate we get into. As you saw on the timing issue, there was considerable back and forth. I don't know that we'll have that on all of them. I have a feeling we could finish the rules in June, but the rules – the second part of my answer is the rules are not the end of our work. This is now a standing committee under the bylaws, and presumably this committee will, or team, the IoT will press on indefinitely. And there are other things on the radar screen to do with the establishment of the standing panel to assist in the SOs and the ACs and ICANN as they establish a standing panel. To do rules on other things, for instance, if the direct customers of the IANA services request special rules, we could help them on that. So there are other things, but the most immediate project we have in front of us is going through these updated supplementary procedures, and my hope is that we can finish that in June. I think we're on stride. That's my sense. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, if you can finish the last part that you mentioned in June, as for the remaining, you can continue, but the essential part is to finish it in June before the deadline, not deadline of 29th of May, but some deadline in June is good, because this is a very important element that you need to concentrate on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And I had my hand up as a participant to comment on Bernie's statement about the date. Bernie, I think that's a very good idea that we come out with a note of some sort saying we are working on the rules. This is, we've had considerable debate on some, but we are making progress, and we do expect to be out, shortly or whatever wording we come up with. So I like the idea of making a statement as opposed to just throwing the date off. So that would be my comment on that. So, Bernie, in light of what Caboose asked and what I said, do you have any further statement on this?
Simply that I'll draft up a statement for you to review, and then at least we can get that posted for the 29th. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. Anybody else have anything? Greg, your hand's up, so you have the floor.
It's Greg Shatton for the record. Just a suggestion with regard to the notice. It might be worthwhile to say in the notice that those who are interested can check the progress of our work on the wiki and by checking the publicly archived email list and the recordings, transcripts, et cetera, from our meetings so that at least they'll see. They can see the work in progress as well as know that the work is in progress.
Thanks, Greg. Very nice suggestion. Bernie, if you could take a note of that. I think I agree with Greg. I think it's a great idea. And so if there's nothing further on this point, we'll move to agenda item number 4, which I'll ask Sam to comment. It's really nothing except an update. If there's anything, there may not be on the policy and legal team efforts with respect to the SO and AC work that's coming up. And so, Sam, over to you if that's okay.
Sure, David. This is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. No new update on it. We're working closely with our policy colleagues and expect to have something out probably within the next week or so to set some direction around this.
Thanks, Sam. Anybody have any questions or comments or okie doke? Seeing none, let's move to agenda item number 5, which is this Malcolm to take the lead on, which is an update and status on, excuse me, on the timing issue. Malcolm, over to you.
Thank you, David. And Bernie, did you get the slides that I sent earlier today, which can accompany this? Ah, here they come. Brilliant. Thank you. Okay. Well, this is divided into two sections, which I think are listed on your sign-up sheet as being the 45 days time limit and the question and repose. If we can have the first slide, please. And now, both these issues have been discussed very fully in this group so far. There comes a point in the discussion of some things when it's sometimes rather jokingly said that you get to the point where everything has been said, but not yet by everyone. Well, I think this particular subject, everything has been said by everyone. So I'm hoping that we can draw a line under it. David said to me at the end of the last session that maybe now we get to the point of asking for a first reading. So my slides now show where we have got to and what is on the table to be proposed for first reading. Okay, so to recap, the time based on the claimant's knowledge of harm. There was a strong sense in the public comment that our original proposal of 45 days was too short. We reached a compromise consensus on changing that from up 45 days to 120 days. And we also adjusted that so as to say that is to be based on either the claimant's knowledge of harm or, if earlier, when the claimant ought reasonably to have known of the harm. And we're proposing now that that is essentially done. We have been many weeks now where we've been accepting that as a consensus on that issue. If we can have the second slide, please. The next slide, please. This is the question of repose, or the time based on ICANN's originating decision. Now, in that, there was, again, a strong sense in the public comments that basing a time limit, which we had previously said as 1 year, with a starting date of when ICANN took a decision, regardless of whether it's yet affected anyone, a strong sense from that public comment that would undermine accountability and be unfair to claimants. In particular, it was noted that a cut-off date for filing a case should never be earlier than when claimants are first able to file the case. Sidley have argued that basing the time on a time limit on the date of ICANN's decision is inconsistent with the bylaws, which refer directly to the claimant's knowledge. ICANN Legal disagrees with that interpretation and would prefer to retain a limit based on the date of when ICANN took its action, regardless of any effect or implementation of that action. We've discussed this very fully, and the arguments and the participants, other than ICANN Legal, have supported basing our time limits exclusively on what I said on the previous slide, that is based upon the awareness of harm, including when the claimant ought reasonably to have been aware of those harm only, and not on the date of ICANN's decision, such as the date of an adoption of a policy that hasn't yet been implemented. So that is the approach that I'm now proposing that we take to a first reading. If we can see the final slides now, that will show what it would be that we would be approving at first reading. The text here in black is the existing text, with red being what we would be changing as a result of these supplementary procedures. And it will say that a claimant shall file a written statement of dispute with the ICDR no more than 120 days after a claimant becomes aware or ought reasonably to have been aware of the material effect of the action or inaction giving rise to the dispute. It does not have a statement added on there saying that it also should not be more than a year after ICANN had taken its decision. So that is what's on the table, and I propose that that is now ready for a first reading, unless anyone has any new issues that we wish to bring up or something that is somehow different to what we have thrashed through in great detail many times on this in this discussion. I now open it to the floor. Caboose.
Malcolm, from the very beginning, I was of the view that we should not have an open-ended. The way it is suggested, it is open-ended. The way that I can suggest it is 6 months, 12 months, or whatever after that should not be. So we should have a time limit on the second party, the polls. So I don't think that we should be fully put it open. So any time limit, whether it's 12 months or whatever, you could agree. Like the first one, you have 45, you have 180 days. We came up between 120 letters for the second part. Also, we have some time limit. It is not appropriate to put it without any time limit. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. David.
Malcolm, thanks. David here. I just have a question, and I lost my connection just for a brief bit while you right near the end of what you were saying, but when it came back on, it was something about within a year. Did I hear that correctly, that you said something within a year right at the end of what you were saying?
What I was saying is that this slide that we have now for a proposal for first reading does not have the text that we had in our first draft proposal that required anything to be placed within a year of when ICANN had taken the decision without regards to whether it had actually yet affected anyone.
Okay, thanks.
So I was pointing out that is not in this slide.
Thank you.
Greg.
Thank you. Greg Shatton for the record. First, I support this proposal. I do think it's ready for a first reading. Second, I am reminded of a maxim that equity will not suffer a wrong to be without a remedy. In other words, if there is a harm, there should be a remedy for that harm. And if the harm is caused by an action or inaction of board or a bylaw or whatever it may be, there needs to be a remedy for that. And if we don't provide it in the IRP, then people will just go to court. I don't think we can argue that this – somebody might be able to argue that the IRP has some sort of preclusive effect, but by and large there are no waiver of litigation and agreement to arbitration provisions. For the empowered community. So I think that it's important that we have a remedy where there's a wrong, and that the concept of repose here, I think, would do violence to that essential concept of justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. David.
Thank you, Malcolm. I do have a comment in response to Greg or with relation to what Greg just said, but I was also going to ask a process question, which I will wait until Sam speaks. But the first point I was going to make is wrongs without remedies. I did want to mention, at least in my opinion, that the IRP process, we need to come up with, we need to refashion in accordance with the bylaws, is an arbitration process that is meant to be, you know, quick, effective, hopefully not costly, at least in relation to court, things like that. But it's not meant to be perfect, and I don't think we should craft perfect rules. I tend to support the thing you have, but I have some qualms that I may raise in a comment if we go to a second comment period. But going to court is a remedy. There are people do have remedies at the end of the day here, and I just wanted to agree with Greg that yes, people may have to go to court, and I see that as a remedy. Anyway, so that's my statement, and my hand's back down.
Thank you, David. Sam.
Hi, this is Sam Eiser from ICANN Legal, and we've made our position on the timing issue very clear, and we don't have any issue with 120 days, so we've stated before our issues is not having an outside limit. But listening to Greg's comment about the issue of having remedy for harm, I think we need to always make sure that as we on the IoT are looking at the IRP, that we're remembering what the purpose of the IRP is. So there is a possibility in the end to get some sort of remedy for harm, but the IRP is really about holding ICANN accountable to its bylaws. And so someone might be harmed by an action of ICANN that is taken in violation of the bylaws or the articles. And so they file an IRP, but that IRP isn't guaranteed to provide a remedy to the person who was harmed. That IRP, the purpose of it is to hold ICANN accountable to its bylaws. So there's no monetary rights out of an IRP. There's no specific performance for those who are attorneys here. What that means, there's no directive to require ICANN to take any specific action. The only thing that comes out of an IRP is a binding. Now, it is binding, and I'm not trying to minimize the purpose of the IRP at all, but the IRP results in a binding determination by the arbitration panel as to whether or not the panel believes that ICANN violated its bylaws or not. And so ICANN then takes that declaration and looks at it and acts on it. But it doesn't mean that ICANN gives anything back. It doesn't give any money. It doesn't give direct relief in most instances to the people coming to ICANN or people coming to the IRP panel who are harmed. So it's a little bit removed. So if someone's looking for monetary relief, the IRP would never be the place to do that, though possibly a finding in an IRP would be of assistance in a court proceeding or something. And so I want to make sure that we understand the harm that we're seeking to fix here. It's not necessarily about the harm that was brought upon any individual or entity, but that harm is evidence of ICANN's violation of the bylaws, which is a harm to the ICANN community at large because ICANN did not follow its bylaws. So I want to make sure we have the purposes really clear as we continue and finalize the IoT's work on the rules.
Thank you, Sam. Caboose.
Yes, Malcolm. I prefer to wait until other 3 or 4 people on the call make their views because you gave your views, Greg supported you in some extent with some qualifications. His view was that let's not to put any time limit. If the people are not happy, go to the court. I don't think that issue from the very beginning, pushing the issue to the court, not allowing the time. But I wait until the other people talk and then to see what is the situation. So for the time being, I keep silent.
Okay, thank you, Caboose. I inserted myself into the queue, and I've now risen to the top of it, so I'll now speak as a participant. I take what Sam was saying in response to Greg. It is important to understand that the IRP is a very limited remedy. It's a remedy that is intended to solve the problem at ICANN, not to provide a full range of remedies to all claimants. But nonetheless, it is intended to be available to claimants so as to solve those problems at ICANN. And it states clearly in the bylaws what the purposes of the IRP are. And one of them is to provide a mechanism for the resolution of disputes as an alternative to legal action in the civil courts of the United States or other jurisdictions. And that is one of the explicit purposes of the IRP. And that's not secured if the mechanism for the resolution of disputes that the IRP offers is not available to a claimant at any point in time. And that would be the kind of, I think, injustice that Greg was referring to when he was speaking. The public comments spoke very clearly on this, that they thought that the IRP should be available. And certainly in my own opinion, the comments that Sam just gave about the limited remedies that are available in the IRP, which are only to give a binding declaration to ICANN on the interpretation of the bylaws and not monetary damages or specific performance or other such remedies. The fact that those are limited actually removes many of the worries that might have been about leaving this process too open. They certainly spoke in favour, to my mind, of saying that there is no harm. There is nothing to worry about ensuring that people have the broadest possible access to the IRP. Because the only thing it can do is to give a definitive statement as to what the bylaws are, and ICANN can only benefit from having that when it is a matter of real controversy. Anyway, that's my response to the Greg-Sam discussion there as a participant. But going back to chairing, I see Greg is now back in the queue. So, Greg.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. I've said a bunch of things in the chat. And I recognize, obviously, the IRP is not a forum for every harm, but for only harms arising from certain types of actions and activities or inactivities. But I see that as being unlinked to the issue of repose and more to the issue of competent jurisdiction or subject matter jurisdiction and what can be heard at all. And secondly, the issue of whether there is direct redress or relief to a party in an IRP. Again, I don't know that I was not thinking of that when I was thinking of remedies. Remedies can come in all shapes and sizes and have broader benefits and more narrow benefits. I tend to believe that unless we have, you know, good Samaritan complainants, that there will be some benefit from the bylaws violation being cured that will inure to the benefit of the complainant. But you know, I don't think the IRP ever contemplated, you know, money damages or, unless I'm wrong, and, you know, nor does it necessarily contemplate that the damage to the particular complainant is the primary reason at any point, at any time, for bringing the IRP. It's often brought out of a sense of a larger sense of justice. Certainly would be for many of the empowered community type cases. But I think we're kind of getting in the weeds, and maybe I'm getting in the weeds all by myself. But I think the point here is that as long as there is a harm of the type that exists, that the IRP is intended to address, the IRP should be available, subject only to the rule that's in front of us now that does provide something in case where a claimant sleeps on their rights. But finding out that their rights evaporated before they even had a chance to go to sleep, that I think is inequitable and something to be avoided. Hopefully it'll be an edge case. I suppose it would be nice if you say that there are sections of the bylaws that can never be challenged through an IRP. But last, and this is last, you know, courts are going to be a good deal more expensive, time-consuming, et cetera, than the IRP, I think, in most cases. So I think we do want to encourage the IRP where it is appropriate to be a jurisdiction of choice. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Kavis.
Yes, I think we have heard Greg two times, we have heard Malcolm two times, we have heard Kavus two times, and heard David two times. What about the others at the group, at the call? What are their views? Because I think we should give the possibility to others, either they are independent or they have some views. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. That's a very good point. Let me go to the chat. I see that Robin, who has not chosen to speak up on the phone on this issue, has spoken on the chat twice. She says, firstly, thanks for the work on this issue. I agree with the proposal to extend the timing. And then further down, I don't think creating a remedy and providing accountability are mutually exclusive concepts. They are both.
Sam also said that she thought that the harm in allowing timing to be extended is that there's an allowance for ICANN to continue to elect in violation of bylaws for an indeterminate period of time. There's an element of accountability to the ICANN community. If ICANN was acting outside its bylaws, that should be flagged as quickly as possible. Now, I believe that Sam is saying that in against the first reading, although to my mind, what she just said there supports there being a first reading because it allows the case to be heard rather than striking it out and leaving it to somebody else to bring a similar case later. So that, to my mind, would speak in favor of the proposal on the table, but I think I'm not sure that Sam agrees with my reading of her intervention. Avery says, I am fine with the proposal in general. I favor longer timings. Okay, we're getting towards the point where we really have to make a call as to whether this is done or not. Greg, I see. Greg, is that a stale hand or is that a new hand? That's a stale hand. Okay, thank you. David, I think that's a new hand from you. I'm going to actually look to you to see if we can actually draw a line under this or whether we need to keep on talking about this until some of us are just too exhausted. David, you have the floor. Can you help?
Thanks, Mel. Yeah, thanks, Malcolm. I'll try to. Caboose raised a good point, and I'm going to ask Bernie to help me in this respect. But as we get ready for first readings, and I need to sort of remind myself of this as I try and do first readings on other issues, we will bat them around on this call, but we also have to go to the list to get the first reading accomplished because we do have a fair number of people who do not attend the calls, but I think by right have a chance to speak up on list in a first reading. Bernie, could you talk just a little bit about the first reading and whether I've got that wrong or what you think, but I'd appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you, David. My understanding of the process for Workstream 2, if you want to follow it, and it seems to resonate with the community, but for the IoT, it really is your independent call to do so. The process would be that a first and second reading are done at an actual meeting, but that the document that is being approved for first and second reading has been published for at least a week on the group's list, and comments have been taken on. And then after that week, at least 1 week, there is a meeting, and then those that attend, if we meet the minimum requirements, considering the comments that have been made on the list, can make a decision. That's my understanding. I hope that helps. Thank you.
That helps, Bernie. So I'll make a suggestion. First of all, let me thank Malcolm for leading this, and hopefully we are at close to the point of exhaustion, but still have an ounce of energy left. And what I'll ask is if Malcolm would take those slides, to me that would be the document. I don't think we need much more. Put them to list in the next day or so. Because to have at least a week, our next meeting is on Tuesday, June, I think it's the 6th. And in order to do that, we would have to be out in a day or so. But basically, we need to come up with a message. Malcolm, maybe you and I could work on it. But the message would be, this has now been discussed as a first reading. We want to confirm that at the next meeting. Here's what's discussed, and just present it to the list with the notice that that's what's going to happen at the next meeting. And then people can do what they want with that. But I think it's fair to pass it by everybody in the group. So I'm interested if there's any reactions to that suggestion. Caboose, your hand's up.
Yes. David, I think the number of participants at this meeting is not sufficient for any final decision on first or second reading because there are 9. My name is 2 times, so it will be 8. You are the rapporteur. You should be totally neutral, not taking position this side or that side, so 7. I don't think that 7 is sufficient to decide on this What about if the initial alternative also be stable, and we give it with those two alternatives to the upper level, whoever would be?
Thank you, Kavus. My audio cut out just a little bit at the end, but I believe I have what you were saying. Is what I'm suggesting is that Malcolm's going to put something on the list and say this is going to be blessed as a first reading accomplished at the next call. And so that's what I was suggesting. And theoretically, or at least in my mind, it would be capable of second reading approval shortly thereafter with probably not much intervention. But again, that's what I was trying to get across.
So, thank you,
David. Oh, and I'm sorry. I should have said there'll just be one. There'll just be one solution, Malcolm's, on the list, and so people will have to speak against it if they want to speak against it. And I don't think we should put alternatives because that will be a continuation of the discussion. And I think what Malcolm's getting to is we've done that. You know, there may be this, you know, points made on the list, but the hope is to try and move this to conclusion. And so I personally doubt that there would be more than one proposal that Malcolm puts out there. Thank you.
Okay.
Kavus,
if you want to put just one proposal, you have to mention the condition under which this proposal has been read for the first time. A number of the people think 7 participants agree to have one single suggestion, and that is this. Either at the second reading, somebody else come and have a counter proposal, or we go to things. But how the number of the participants, in my view, is not sufficient balance to be reflecting the views of the greater participation. Unfortunately, we are fewer and fewer. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. But I think we're still together as a group on list, and I've seen some folks come on list that don't typically come to meetings. So. Today is not a first reading, but Malcolm has discussed it he has helpfully, in my view, discussed it as such. It's set up for first reading at the next meeting, and that's what Malcolm's going to confirm on list. But I did hear Malcolm's voice, and so he's got his hand up too. So over to you, Malcolm.
Yes, thank you. It's just on the process issue, David. Kavus raises an important point. It is a concern that there is so little participation in the group. We have a quorum, and we have met it, so technically this is okay, but it is a worry that there are more people. But I think ultimately you need to make the call there as to whether we have had sufficient support. And if we do not have it, then the answer is that we can't complete our work. We have to understand that. The choice is not between supporting this or saying, oh, and there's not enough people, and therefore it must be something else. It's, do we have enough people to support anything? Or if we don't have enough people to support anything, then we have failed. Then we cannot conclude draft supplemental procedures. That would be a great shame. So I would urge everyone in the group who has taken the trouble to be here to try and encourage our fellows to attend so that we can reach a conclusion on this. But ultimately, whether we are able to reach that conclusion is going to have to be your call as chair, David.
Thanks, Malcolm. And I think that the process that I'm trying to answer Aubrey's questions in this too, the process that I just outlined, where you come to the list with what you just presented and tell the list, this will be blessed as a first reading at the next meeting. Either make a comment here or be at the meeting, I think that will be sufficient. If we don't have a quorum at the next meeting, then that's something I'll have to deal with or we'll have to deal with. But for now, does anybody object to Malcolm putting this out for the next meeting?
Next meeting for first reading or next meeting for second reading?
First, Kavus.
For first reading.
Yes. I'm going to come to you, Kavus, but Greg has his hand up in the queue a little bit before you.
Okay,
so, Greg.
I wait. Sorry.
Greg, you have the floor.
Okay, I'm waiting. Okay.
I would love to.
I'm waiting. Okay.
Greg Shatton, for the record, I do want to clarify whether this is a first reading or this plus additional assent or dissent on the list from those who did not participate constitutes the first reading, or is it this plus the interim plus the next call that's a first reading, so we're going to have a third call to have a second reading. I'm still not quite clear. That's my first point. Second point is that this is not a particularly large group to begin with, putting aside Jones Day and staff, but counting Sam, it's maybe only about 16 people anyway, 16 or 17. And some of those have never surfaced. And so I think, to some extent, this needs to be considered as a coalition of the willing. So I think that, to my mind, there's certainly ample support. And I think, lastly, and this is a point I've had a number of discussions, we need here to look for support and the absence of opposition. So I think it's just right, David, that you're asking whether anybody was opposed to this. I support it, and I do believe we should move on, and I think we have an adequate number of people here plus appearance on the list to do everything we can based on the size of the overall group that we have. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Before I comment, Cavus, go ahead. You have the floor.
Yes, David. I am not in favor of having intermediate reading and the second reading. That means two more readings. Why not, if everybody agrees with the limited numbers that here, seven or eight, including yourself, to take it as a first reading, but trying to encourage in a way that a second reading you would have more people. But I don't want any intermediate. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Malcolm has his hand up, then I'm going to ask Bernie to comment. Malcolm, go ahead.
Okay, David. While I was prepared to act in accordance with your request there and propose this out on the list as being a proposal for first reading, I see in the chat that Outreach says, I would have preferred this being called first reading, but okay, that Robin says, I agree, Avery, but Greg says, I support calling this plus the list responses as a first reading. And it was also my understanding from what you had mailed me beforehand that this meeting would have been considered the first reading as well. So I would ask you, on the basis of those interventions that I'm reading from the chat, do we not have sufficient here to say, this is a first reading, this goes out to the list now. If anybody has an objection on the list, they are on notice that the next meeting will be a second reading and that they are therefore able to intervene in that light. So they still haven't lost opportunity to do it. But we are moving forward rather than just calling this another discussion group.
David. Thanks, Malcolm. I like the idea. I'm sorry. Cavus?
Yes, I think in view of the considerable time that we have spent, I suggest that we take Malcolm's proposals, take it as a first reading, and trying to put it for second reading for those people having objections on the list or whatever, and we take it up on the second reading. But take this one as a first reading with the number that we have. Just indicate that it was approved with the number of participants and put the number here. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. I have listened to what everyone said, and frankly, it makes sense to me. So I'm gonna reverse my course stated just a minute ago and say I'd like to go with the plan that Malcolm just stated. But let me first ask if anybody here objects to that. Hearing and seeing none, then we will call this a first reading and go out to list. Malcolm, I'll look to you to do that pretty much the way you just stated. And so, okay. And so I think that draws a line under this discussion for agenda item number 5. So thank you all for that, and thanks, Malcolm, for leading that discussion. Moving on to the agenda, we have about 13 minutes left, and I thought we would get to a first reading on certain issues that we had spoken about before, not as extensively as we had on timing, but I don't think they're as controversial as a timing issue. And so I put them in the agenda yesterday, and I mentioned them in an email, I think it was last Friday. The first is retroactivity, which has two subparts. Retroactivity of the rules themselves and retroactivity of the substantive standard of review. I actually came to the list with an email about this on May the 2nd, and I will put a copy of that email in the chat. And on the retroactivity, I think we I didn't hear or see any objections on the list or when I last mentioned it on a call that the retroactivity recommendations for first reading would be as follows, and I'm reading from some slides that I sent. First, with respect to retroactive substantive IRP standard, I believe that our position is there will be no retroactivity. The bylaws are the bylaws. That's it. Two, with respect to retroactivity of the supplementary rules of procedure, I'll read out, it's not too long, what the position I mentioned, and I think we've agreed. With respect to the retroactive application of the new rules to IRPs now pending and filed on or after October 1st, 2016, I recommend that we insert a provision allowing a party to request the panel hearing the case to decide this as a matter of discretion. We should add a standard for the panel in reviewing such requests, specifically that unless all parties consent, it shall not allow new rules to apply to pending cases if that action would work a substantial unfairness or increase in costs to any party or otherwise be unreasonable in the circumstances. That is the suggested first reading for the retroactivity comments, and I'm opening the floor to people if they want to comment on that. Caboose, please, you have the floor.
Yes, with respect to the first one, no problem. With respect to the second one, the criteria of being supplementary, I think we have discussed it at length. The text that you read initially, the framework of that was proposed by Avery some time ago. And I think that covers, because you put it not a automatic retroactivity, but subject to some discretion of the panel. So that seems to cover the point of the people. That means it is not without any condition, under certain circumstances and certain conditions, and you have described or mentioned the condition, and that is subject to the discretion of the panel. In my view, it seems okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Does anybody else have a comment? And Caboose, I'm having a little bit difficulty hearing, but I believe you said that was okay. I did hear a lot of what you said, and I think that you concluded by saying it was okay. Is that correct?
Yes, I said that is okay for me with the explanation and the text you have provided, giving this as an opportunity that subject to discussion of the panel, this activity could be possible. Yes.
Thank you, Caboose. That was much clearer on the phone for some reason. Greg, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Just briefly, I wanted to say that I supported your entire formulation there and you know, would agree to any reasonable explanations added on to that as well. But there was nothing there that shocked my conscience. I think we're in good shape on this.
Thank you, Greg. Does anybody else wish to make a comment on this? Hearing none, we will consider that a first reading accomplished on retroactivity recommendations, and I'll come to the list with a note that will be similar to Malcolm's. I'll wait to look at Malcolm's, and I'll plagiarize it and use it for the retroactivity thing. I'm looking at the clock, 8 minutes left. The next item that I had up for first reading was the issue of standing and sometimes described as materially affected and I'll put a second email in the chat. I wrote about this in the email on May 8th. So let me just put that in here. I believe this is it. And on this, on the materially affected issue, there were a couple of recommendations. There was a comment that asked that essentially anybody could bring an IRP claim. And I recommended, I mean, I think we recommended against that as beyond the provisions of the bylaws. And then there was a request, I believe it was by several commenters, but I remember INTA, INTA, the Trademark Association, most clearly, but was probably from several, talking about standing for people that would be subject to imminent harm. And Becky Burr came in the email list with a comment about this and pointed out bylaw provision. I think it was 4.3P. And so I thought that was a good comment that Becky made. And so the recommendations here are, one, as I said, that we reject the comment that anyone can bring an IRP. And two, with respect to the imminent harm, the recommendation is that we revise the definition of a claimant. Caboose, I'll get to you in just a minute. In section one of the new rules, to take into account the strict provisions of bylaw section 4.3P, even though the definition of claimant follows the provision of bylaw 4.3B1. In other words, I think definition of claimant needs to be a little bit broader to take into account 4.3P. Two, make corresponding changes in section 9 of the rules as required. And three, recommend against changing provisions of section 11.D of the rules that was that dealt with contract claims and IANA services. And so that slide that had been sent along is open for comment. Caboose, you have your hand up, I believe. Is that a new or an old hand?
No, there's a new hand. With respect
okay.
to the first one, yes, not anybody or everybody could bring. With respect to the second, the only clarification I require, or request not require, I request is that what is the imminent, when you say imminent harm, what harm are imminent, what harm are not imminent, and who decides on that? What is the criteria for the imminent or non-imminent harm? If that is clear, we can go ahead with that. But for the time being, I have some doubt because it would be a little bit subjective. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Bylaw 4.3P simply says a claimant may request interim relief. Interim relief may include prospective relief, interlocutory relief, or declaratory injunctive relief, et cetera. And it's not a defined term there that I see. And so I believe this would be up to the panel. And so that would be my answer to your question. Anybody else, comments,
so
or questions? I'm sorry, go ahead, Caboose.
Is it imminent or not?
I didn't hear that. Could you say that one more time?
Do you still maintain imminent, objective imminent before harm, or you just put it harm and refer it back to the bylaw?
I think, yes, that's my understanding. Malcolm, you had your hand up, but you took it down. Did you want to comment?
Yes, I was just going to say that I don't find the fact that the panel would determine whether a thing was imminent in the context of giving interim relief to be at all surprising. It's perfectly normal before panels to have that kind of thing to prevent issues that will be before them being rendered moot by some kind of irreversible action. I'm quite sure that any panelist that is has the appropriate experience of such things to be a suitable panelist will be quite familiar with it. I have every confidence they can work it out, so I don't see an issue. I don't see a difficulty here.
Thanks, Malcolm. Sam, your hand's up. You have the floor next.
Thanks. And again, this is Sam Eisner for the record, where I agree with Malcolm. I like to put it on the record. Malcolm agreed with your comment. But I'm not clear on what the what you're proposing to bring into the definition of claimant to account for 4.3b or 4.3p. I'm just not clear on what that means.
Thanks, Sam. Let me answer that real quickly because we're at the top of the hour and I want to mention something else. What I had hoped to accomplish was that Sidley make, you know, basically make, you know, do a due diligence check on the language that we have for the claimant to make sure that that language allows for people to take advantage of 4.3p and that the language in the rules doesn't somehow preclude that. But I can explain that more. We're not going to finish this particular issue on this call. And so if okay. It's okay with you, thanks, Sam. I may move on. I was going to try and get to ask Greg if he wanted to speak to Agenda Point 9, which is just getting to an explanation discussion of the process that we need to follow after we conclude this phase. I think it was Greg that asked me about that, but we don't have time for that. I'll put that a little bit higher on the agenda for the next call. But I would like to thank everybody, and we've reached first reading on two issues on this call. And I think I'm going to be coming to list with a number of issues, and I'm hoping, again, as I said before, through the list and the calls to get a number of these pushed through first reading and obviously then through second reading. If anybody would like to make a final comment on this process, please go ahead and speak up. And if not, I think we can... Thank you, Sam. I think we can wrap this call and give everybody back a minute of their day. And I'd like to thank everybody, and especially Malcolm, for leading on that issue. And we can end the recording. Goodbye, all.
Bye.